and mitzvah, which require that one master one's emotions and one's thoughts, etc. I got through this, got into this. Before I go back to that, so Yosef Weinberger brought to my attention an interesting line in the Maral. I guess it's an issue that needs to be explored a little bit more. And that is that the Maral, I guess, in Tiferes Yisrael, I think he told me it's Perek Lamed Ches, also discusses this question and unequivocally states that it's impossible to speak about the control of emotions in the context of mitzvahs, particularly with regard to mitzvahs lo saaseh. But it's impossible to impose upon somebody a lav, not to believe something or not to feel something, etc. Again, he doesn't relate to the question of losachmod, which of course is according to Sefer HaBatim the av shebekulam, the paradigm. But it's just an interesting formulation. Then he told me that in the critical edition that came out that. Hartman put out the more scholarly edition of the Maral. So I think he relates to some of the apparent steers and suggests that maybe one should distinguish within the Maral between issues of belief and issues of emotion, which is also an intriguing idea. It doesn't sound that way in the Maral, in the passage that he showed me at the Tiferes Yisrael. But of course, you have to explain some of the phenomena. It's not only losachmod, it's losisna, sachicha, dolavacha, which I hope we'll get a chance to speak about as well. So, but I think a simpler answer might be, as we've been discussing, that I think there's that this goes back to the framework that I've tried to draw, and that is that there are, I think, three perspectives. That you can bring to, generally speaking, that you can bring to bear to these issues. One is to acknowledge either the impossibility or at least the extreme difficulty, in some cases, of really accomplishing anything on the belief or emotional side of things. And then you have to reread the psukim, although they're formulated in terms of either belief or in terms of emotion, as referring to as referring to meisim, and it's either an efficient way or an idealistic way, right? To highlight the norms that are required under these circumstances. Much of the Ma'ad Dover Domer, as we discussed, the Ravid's view of lo sachmod or lo sisnach esachicha bilvavecha, but being connected with hocheach tochiach. Again, hopefully we get a chance to look at that one too. Hocheach tochiach esamisecha, meaning. Not so much that you can control the emotion of hate, but at least that you can respond, I guess, in a constructive manner through channeling it, into tochacha. And as we'll see in a moment, we have this with regard to v'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha. Certainly, that's one of the things I want to examine. I made allusion to it last time, just to go through some of the pratim in a couple of minutes. So that, while something is formulated in the Torah in a certain way, that's an ambition, that's a lechatchila, or maybe it's just a shorthand, convey a group of actions, which are usually simulate or are a consequence or come together with this emotion. So we don't really mean love your neighbor, we mean, conduct yourself consistent, with someone who loves his neighbor. We don't mean, abstain from hate. We mean, take actions that mitigate or that are contrary, to someone, who hates. Again, mashal amad avadome, though of course they're totally different, is, dibra Torah kelashon bnei adam that we find with regard to the Rabbanu Shalom and the question of attributes. So we know that a lot of the medievalists, Rambam included, explained that both language, descriptive language, and in some cases, attributes are not really positive. They're negative attributes. It's just a way of conveying a perspective. And Of course, you know, there's a theological aspect to it, which doesn't necessarily have a parallel when it comes to belief in emotion. But to the extent that, you know, the ambition, let's say, is too great, the idea that Dibra Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam, that the Torah would use a phrase, you know, which isn't the actual chiyuv, but, you know, one which has, you know, a negative meaning, or a meaning translated into action, albeit consistent with a certain, generally speaking, with a certain emotional or belief state, that's the parallel, as I say, is something which is totally acceptable. Even in our own language, we use colloquialisms, which, you know, I love that guy, I hate that guy, or that thing, right? So it doesn't always, you know, really refer to one's emotions, or even if it does, you know, that's not what you mean in a particular context. It's sometimes just gets translated to the way that you act, or sometimes it's a negative rather than a positive. It's just the way that we speak and the way that we convey things, you know, strongly and quickly and efficiently, because in some cases it's a group of things. So instead of saying, as we'll see in a moment, Bror lo misa yafe, and the obligation to see one's wife before one marries her, or this and that other thing, shorthand way of saying it is v'hafta l'riacha kamocha, love your neighbor, behave as if you love your neighbor, either you do or you don't. But either way, we associate a group of conduct or a certain type of conduct with that emotion. Yeah.
That apply the same way to beliefs as emotions?
So I think you might distinguish, obviously, between your beliefs and emotions, I think in either direction. But again, belief, I think what you'd have to say is, cultivate belief. You might say that that's true for emotions as well. But I think, in the case of emotions, I think it's possible to say that that's all we can ask for, and we don't really need more. In the case of belief, obviously, simulating belief when you don't really...
Well, one could argue that you should be philosophically engaged or try your best to believe in X.
That what?
What would happen if, say, someone struggled with a belief?
Right.
Right. What would be the fear in that instance?
I mean, would there be any significance to it? Or
yeah.
No, so that's what I'm saying. I mean, obviously, in the case of simulating beliefs, or beliefs that carry together, beliefs can be feelings can be important, because they represent, in an efficient manner, like a group of conduct. And I think that makes a great deal of sense. In the case of belief, I think in the end of the day, we have to believe about belief that, the beliefs themselves are more intrinsically important. But I don't think that necessarily means that when you're commanded to believe something, that it's all or nothing. I mean, maybe we'll speak about this also. I mean, I think the Rambam has a certain view on this. Other Rishonim have slightly different views. There are mandated beliefs, for sure, but behaving as if you believe, or doing things, let's say, to cultivate belief, are very meaningful in their own right.
I wonder if somebody really struggled with believing that you can drive into angels.
Believing?
They're allowed to drive into them laughing.
Yeah.
Right. That would be like.
Right, but you're asking a different question now, right? So you're asking, within the obligation to cultivate certain beliefs. So, what is the line of being meaningful or significant, or is the effort more important than as important, or at least partially important, as opposed to, attaining, the goal, and what are the different goals? So I'm happy to discuss that, but we'll reserve it for a time we'll discuss about beliefs. Because then, that's an important question. That's, the Nebuch HaPikaris question, they sometimes call it. Is anything less than full and proper belief unacceptable and meaningless? I would assume not. But, again, there are different perspectives on that issue. Right now, I'm discussing kind of a broader question, and that is, assuming that the Torah wants beliefs and emotions, does it really want beliefs and emotions, or is that just Dibur Torah Kelashon B'nei Adam about, cultivating, behavior per se, or behavior which is conducive. And that, I think, if I understood your question before, I think there is a big difference between emotions and beliefs. Because in the case of beliefs, it's clearly the goal. And then I think your second question is important, but it's a, you know, we'll leave it for another time. But that is, well, what is the status of intermediate or incomplete? And those could be two different things also, belief. And I think that's a very important question. But that there is a goal of belief, and that is the ultimate, and that you have to work and strive towards that, I think is beyond question. Whereas in the case of certain emotional mitzvos, and I think you could be mechalik between them too. You know, if we're talking about avas Hashem, we're talking about avas reya, or avas hager, or sinas lo sisos achicha, the negatives, or sinas hamesis, etc. I think you might be able to distinguish. But I think that one could even make the case that we care, according to some Rishonim, that we care less about actually achieving that state of emotion than we care about the way that you interact with the people. So interacting in a manner which is consistent with love or hate, etc., is according to some Rishonim, maybe all you can achieve or maybe all you need to achieve. I don't think you could say that about belief, because I think it's a very good point. But as the state of incomplete or intermediate belief, let's leave that for the moment, but that is an important topic. Yeah?
Would you also leave a mechalik between mitzvos like v'ahavta l'racha kamocha, or v'osisna asukhicha bo l'racha, which is legislating in the realm of emotions, as opposed to mitzvos which are legislating in the realm of instincts?
Realm of instinct?
Right, like Osachim, unless you say that it's really scheming or Ashiyasa Maitha, so it's like it's a fleeting instinct.
Well, I don't think it's fleeting ever. Meaning, I don't think those Asava and Los Achmod are ever fleeting.
Because they're really different planning or...
Right. Because I don't think that the Torah imposed that upon us, nor do I think it's particularly damaging for somebody to walk by and think.
The Torah wouldn't legislate on the instincts. It's only because it's a more... Complicated.
Well, I think, we'll put it this way, I think the Torah is legislating. I mean, again, if we take seriously, especially the Ibn Ezra idea... So the Torah is basically saying, don't just cultivate narrowly, but cultivate a certain perspective on life, which makes this, inconceivable. In other words, if we're comparing, one's respect, let's say, for other people's marriage or other people's property, to the sense of imbalance and unreality, I'm going to sprout wings and fly to Shemayim, or even in a caste society. To, oh, I'm going to marry the princess, not in America, but in, Moldavia or something. So then, might take more imagination than sprouting wings and flying, to Shemayim. So I think what Ibn Ezra is telling us very profoundly, which is why I was suggesting it's the end of the Sarsa Nibros, is not only that you can do it, but that, it's a whole orientation. It is cultivating a certain instinct and almost like a visceral, response, to things. And I think the Torah, in its highest ambition, thinks that we can do that, but we can do that through commitment, by being, not just tepidly observant, but by thinking that this is the be-all and end-all of life, and this is our raison d'etre. So, and studying, I think Talmud Torah has a lot to do this. You study it and it becomes so much a part of you, it's inconceivable because, it's reprehensible, right, to be planning, to undermine somebody else's sovereignty or somebody else's kedushas ishus, et cetera. So I think that, fleeting is not the issue, is not the problem, but the ability, the capacity to redirect or reorient your very instinct and visceral response. I get an example of, smoking on Shabbos. Again, I'm not a smoker, but this is what people really told me, that, they suffer like withdrawal or all sorts of things. Whatever, they have the ability, to smoke, and they can't. But on Shabbos, they just don't feel it. Again, I don't know if it's so for every smoker, but I just think it's an amazing idea in the sense of, a person's commitment just establishing, even like there's a physical response, obviously, in that case, if it's true. It's remarkable. So, I think there is a difference between Los Achmod. Also, I think when you talk about, Habas Reya, Habas Ger, Sinas, Achiv, and so on, you're talking about something much more specific. And again, Losachmod we saw was interpreted by differently by different Rishonim. Some Rishonim did think that there was a more targeted, narrow targeted goal. That's when we discussed the sugya actually, right? Rabbeinu Yonah, in his way, the Ibn Ezra in his, etc. Meaning, is this about materialism? Is it about exploitation of friendship, or a person capitalizing on his stature or the perceived stature that other people, hold him to, or hold him in that kind of esteem, kind of like a cynical, manipulative. That there are different, even within Los Achmo, there were different, elements. I was partially suggesting that maybe it's wider than all of those things, and it's about, cultivating like a broader appreciation. Maybe that's why it's Kol Asher L'Reachar, not just because it's about respecting other people's sovereignty and boundaries, but because the range doesn't matter. The real point is, a person's commitment, having the capacity to redefine and reorient his personality instinctively, and so on. In which case, it's not about Ben Adam L'Makom or Ben Adam L'Chavero, right? Or this one or that one. It's that broader. So that's why it's Kol Hashem L'Reacha, not because Kol Hashem L'Reacha is a common denominator of Bibles. So if that's true, then it really is about reorienting your responses, your response to stimuli. That's an amazing thing. I think it could be Michalik. I mean, they all belong to a broader class, but I think there are Chilukim. Anyway, so I just wanted to point out with regard to that. So I think out of these three perspectives. So one is that, to reduce, especially the emotional ones, but I agree with you about the belief ones. Again, it could be that the belief ones also have, pragmatic outlets and norms, both because the halacha always likes to deal with norms, it objectifies and concretizes things, and because of our belief, like the chinuch, that achar, ha-pa'ulos, nimshachos, ha-levavos. Meaning that that's a methodology, to cultivate belief. Just as, actions might be a methodology to cultivate feelings, emotions. So the point is that, broadly speaking, I think there are three perspectives. One is to pretty much say that this is an unattainable legislation. I don't think it's unattainable for a person to believe or to feel, but to demand that one believe or feel may be somewhat unattainable, at least in the short term, maybe even in the longer term. But what the Torah wants is norms. But as we pointed out, there's still a distinction between the faith ones and the emotional ones. That's the narrowest reading of this group. The other extreme is that the Torah really feels that there is a capacity for it, not by snapping your fingers, but there are things that you can do, quickly to cultivate, the goal. Kishmo Kenu, it's Abba, it's Sina, it's Losove, right? Losachmo, in the case of Mesis, it's Emuna, and so on. And like the Chinuch said, right, the Chinuch asked the question, as we noted, and then the Chinuch dismissed the question almost too sharply. Like, of course, that's ridiculous. You have to be a tipesh, and an Am Haaretz, to think that this is even a problem. That's me katzeh, ela katzeh. But then the point is that even the norms are just methods or means, to the end. And maybe part of the process, or maybe additional expressions. Maybe not. There's no even need for a process. The middle view is the view that we do actions, we're commanded to do actions, but we believe that, again, like the chinuch, that those actions create a climate that is conducive for the more ambitious attainment. And that, I think, is what we find in a lot of the Rishonim and a lot of these things. We certainly saw that with respect to Losachmo. That explains things on multiple levels. When you find a particular one of these group, that has multiple levels, I think often that is an indication that you're dealing with this phenomenon. Namely that at least on two, possibly on more levels, there are actions involved, and actions because per se, in terms of efficiency and the end result, or just this conglomerate of actions are captured, you know, by this by someone who would have this emotion. But more than that, they the actions are intended to create a climate to instill, to cultivate the actual emotion. That's how you do it. It's through commitment and through actions, repetitive actions, you know, didactic actions, and so on. And I think that's when you'll find that there are different levels of a particular mitzvah. So when it comes to the Ahavta L'Racha Kamocha, I just wanted to show how this is played out. Last time we noted there are certain additional challenges in the Ahavta L'Racha Kamocha, Chayecha Kodmin, the intensity of Kamocha, the ego, and so on. So again, each topic, you know, has to be dealt with independently in terms of, you know, which of these three, broadly speaking, these three perspectives is going to be the more normative one, you know, for a particular issue. It could be that Lo Harei, we're dealing with them as a large group, but it could be that Lo Harei, you know, the Essen Kimo Alavin, or the faith ones like the emotional ones, or depending on the level of how demanding it is, right? You know, Ahavas Ager, Ahavas Hashem, Ahavas Reya, and so on. So when it comes to the Haftar L'Racha Kamocha, Zeh Klal Gadol B'Torah, at least according to Rabbi Akiva, so as we know, the evidence is very mixed, and I think it reflects all three views. If you look just in the Talmud, again, it's very, very striking that we have almost no expression of the real ambition of the Ahavta L'Racha Kamocha as an ideal, as something that can be really part of your emotional halachic makeup. If you look at the Ahavta L'Racha Kamocha, the way that it's quoted in Shas, mostly you get actions, but also narrow actions. And there are two ways to relate to that. One is that that's all that it means, and that's all that it can mean. And then B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha, you know, is a bit of a disappointment. It's a phrase meant to convey, you know, multiple norms, but without really the greater ambition. Another way to look at it is that B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha even applies to some of these narrower things. And Kol Shekein, if these expressions are important, then the ones that, you know, that we normally would associate, you know, with an intense, you know, committed, you know, relationship between every Jew and really a sense of identity and empathy, you know, Kol Shekein, that is true. And then, of course, the possibility, you know, that these and other things, are part of the process of cultivating this. So just to take a quick survey, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on the Mem Hei Amud Aleph, and then again in the Aleph, a few places, speaks about B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha in terms of Baror Lo Misa Yafa. Okay, so that obviously is something that initially takes us aback, but we need to relate to it. So again, even in the context, here's somebody who's a Rasha who's getting the death penalty, and so one way to look at it is, wow, you know, not someone to emulate, obviously, and since, you know, B'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, and that takes precedence over B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha. So one would think that there's no expression of B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha left for somebody who's about to be put to death for his religious crimes, right? So the answer is Baror Lo Misa Yafa. Still, even in this context, right, with everything that it implies, there's still B'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha. It's an amazing, ambition. Even in Russia, even in the competitive V'ahavta, a contest, gets this perspective. Or no, it's not that at all. What it shows is that V'ahavta L'Racha Kamocha is not about emotions, it's not about identity, it's about a series of, proper interactions, and as long as the fellow is still Jewish, and, he qualifies. So, Baror Lo Misa Yafa, we shouldn't see this as an ambitious, but as a way of highlighting that this is a very compromised concept. Moreover, in the case of Baror Lo Misa Yafa, right, there is another element, since some of the Rishonim are very bothered by Chayecha Kodmin, and I think that's a fascinating thing, because, again, one might have said the Chayecha Kodmin is just about kumbasein shevaltas. That means you don't have to throw away your life to be after leacha kamocha. That doesn't mean that by saying chayacha kodmin that you have to compromise the after leacha kamocha. But in any case, if you are bothered by this and you see, you know, again, the competition between you and this other person as somehow being a barrier, you know, a limit on the after leacha kamocha, so in a certain sense, bror lo misa yafa, you know, is a non-competitive, you know, environment. So the Bali Tosis actually say this. I mean, I'm not making this up. Bror lo misa yafa, Tosis says in Sanhedrin, mem heyom ralef, yesh mfarshim mishum de l'riacha kamocha lo shayich mechayim, v'chayecha kodmin, right, just like the Ramban in his Perush HaTorah quotes chayecha kodmin. So the Bali Tosis already quoted chayecha kodmin as a kind of a stira, right, to a meaningful, emotional, and ambitious v'ahavta l'riacha kamocha. But the Bali Tosar are taking it a giant step further by saying, yeah, that's why bror lo misa yafa, because, you know, he's about to leave. There's no competition here, so you can apply v'ahavta l'riacha. The yesh mefarshim, another way of limiting this din, bishum d'chsiv b'reisha d'kra lo sikom v'lo titar v'lishon nekima haynu misa k'ramina l'kamon perek arba misas gabi nekom yinkam kishu omer v'hevesi aleichem cherev, etc. So the other perspective is to highlight the resh of the krav, which is lo sikom v'lo sitar. In general, v'hafta l'yach kamocha in kedoshim is surrounded by, you know, lo samar al dam riyacha, hocheach tochiach esam isecha, lo sisas achicha b'vavecha, and the kima and the tira. So one way to look at it is that v'hafta l'yacha kamocha is extremely limited. This is a way of telling you or emphasizing. It's the, you know, litein ase, you know, alos ase. There's an isur of nikima and the tira. There's an isur of sisas achicha b'vavecha. What should you do? V'yahavta l'riacha kamocha. L'samen odam riacha. What should you do? You should get involved. V'yahavta l'riacha kamocha. So if you see it that way, not as a standalone, but as something which is meant to contrast and to complement, to augment, in other words, these other dinim and isurim, so then v'yahavta l'riacha kamocha is a very minimal, you know, kind of an issue. But nothing can be more minimal than the way the Tosas here in Sanhedrin, the first day, this is already the second day, it says, bror lo misa yafa, because nekimo, netira, right, has that kind of a connotation. That could be an even, it doesn't have to be an only. But the first one certainly is an only. Of course, you have to broaden what Tosas says in Sanhedrin a little bit, because there are other Gemaras. So the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, as I mentioned, says, Ein l'kaddish asa isha ad shatir ena. So, bror lo misa yafa is about conduct. There's no emotional element. It's certainly not intense. And it's in a non-competitive environment. You know, for Russia, who is not a sympathetic individual. Here, right, we have something which is a lot closer to a more idealistic v'yahavta l'riacha kamocha, meaning a person should take steps in advance of his marriage or when looking for a wife that will be conducive, right, to the relationship, you know, being an idealistic one. That's an important thing. V'yahavta l'riacha kamocha, therefore you should take steps in advance, right, to make sure that the person you marry is somebody who you can build, you know, a life of love and affection. But again, it's about a maisa, right? It's a norm, it's an action. It's to forestall future problems. It's an eitz tova. It's not a chiyuv, unlike bror lo misa yafa. And it's certainly still quite limited. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Pei Daled has a bit of a more ambitious, well, questionable. Gemara has another idea. There the Gemara speaks about hakaza sadam. So the Gemara says, you know, not allowed to be chovel, you know, avicha v'imecha, not allowed to wound, right, a parent, which means drawing blood. So what if you do that in a medical context? Hakaza sadam. So interestingly enough, the Gemara uses v'yahavta l'riacha kamocha, this is the Gemara in Pei Daled in Sanhedrin, to establish that, you know, that's not chavala, right, at all. So that, again, is something that is of limited Right, that's hardly, you know, something to rhapsodize about. But there is something important about that context. The only question is, how important? Because basically what the Gemara is using the Haftar Reacha Kamocha for is the idea that motivation, right, can transform what otherwise would be a different definition. In other words, this would be, the physical act here is of Kabbalah. The motivation to do it, L'shem Refuah, right, V'hafta L'reacha Kamocha, right, turns it away from Kabbalah, you know, into an expression of V'hafta. So there's an objective question here, and that is, how difficult is it to change that context of Kabbalah? Is it Kabbalah? Is it gratuitous Kabbalah? It's a Kabbalah issue, partially. Is it gratuitous Kabbalah and destructive Kabbalah, right, which is Chayv Nisa? In which case, once again, the Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha is accomplishing, you know, a very modest role here. Because it's just basically establishing this isn't gratuitous, right, and it's not destructive. No, the Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha, right, you could yawn. On the other hand, if you think that the din of Kabbalah is more an objective, you know, drawing of blood, right? Kabbalah has a more objective definition, and what you really need in order to transform from Kabbalah, right, is some other Hagdara. So then what you're saying is that V'hafta L'reacha Kamocha is playing somewhat of an ambitious role here. It's taking something which physically is Kabbalah, right, not just establishing that it isn't gratuitous and that it's constructive or not destructive, but that because it's a chalos of V'hafta L'reacha Kamocha, it takes something which otherwise, right, would constitute a capital crime, and it can turn it into something totally different. Only something that, you know, has its own chalos and its own ambition, you know, can accomplish that. So it's harder to know about this particular Gemara and assessing it. Then you have the Gemara in Shabbos, and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. And that's the story again, the Hillel and Shammai story with the Geirus. And that, of course, is also kind of an open-ended issue. On the one hand, you know, the Ikar Geirus, according to this story in the Gemara, is the Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha, if indeed that's what's going on. Firstly, it's important to know that Rashi has two... the Gemara, as we know, has, you know, the... not the Ahavta L'reacha Kamocha, but the, you know, seeming negative... seeming negative, you know, formulation of that. And the question is that at all based on V'ahavta L'reacha, is that an expression of V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha or not? And that seems to be two deos in Rashi, in Masechet Shabbat. According to the first day of Rashi, that's nothing to do with V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha. According to the second view of Rashi, this is an expression of it. The fact that it is formulated in the negative rather than in the positive is something that the Mefarshim speak about. Is that because, again, in its positive, in any kind of normative way, it's unattainable, and it's a recognition of that you know, high ambition that is unattainable. So they, what we say is, you know, whatever is distasteful or whatever is unacceptable, you know, to you, don't do unto others. We turn the whole thing from a regesh, you know, and from an ambition, you know, we negated the whole thing and basically turned it into an action. On the other hand, the idea that is ikar, you know, yahadus, and the rest is a zil gemar, would certainly seem to establish V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha as something more than baror lo misa yafa, but as something, again, which is transformative, something which is a, you know, which captures, let's say, the essence of Yahadus. So this Gemara is an open question in terms of its assessment. Similarly, we'll talk about this when we try to finish this off, the Sifra quotes Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Ben Azai, right? So what's the Zeh Klal Godol Torah? Is it V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha? Or is it Sefer Toldos Adam? So we'll leave this for the next time, but there's a big machlokas on Rishonim already, the Rabban, and the Rash, and the Gra, how to read, what exactly is the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Azai? What exactly is that debate about what is Zekal Gadol Batorah? And what we'll see is that some Rishonim again turned this into a very lofty, ambitious a discussion of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, its connection to the very concept of Tzelem Elokim, the idea, possibly even in its most ambitious, that every human being, certainly every Jew, every committed Jew, Reacha, is somebody who deserves to be treated, you know, with the intense Ahava, you know, that really defies, you know, personal ego and personal interests, notwithstanding Chayecha Kodman. That's what makes it Zeh Klal Gadol Batorah, and connects it to, you know, B'Tzelem Elokim Bara Osam, because every person is endowed with that kind of, you know, B'Tzelem Elokim capability, and therefore you owe it to him almost. He has the right, almost, of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. Or no? Is this again just a very, very pragmatic, you know, quid pro quo? This is more about efficiency in terms of the way that the world, you know, operates the best through self-interest and galgala chozer and things of that that type than it is about ambition. So, per se, just the, you know, words themselves, which Rabbi Kiva Ben Azai, are certainly open to interpretation, and we'll find that the Rishonim actually do take opposite views. Similarly, there's a very interesting Yerushalmi Nedarim, Perek Tes Halacha Dalid, speaks about the Kimo Netira, rejecting the policy of the Kimo Netira, because it's like, you know, one person, it's like a person cutting off his right hand, you know, in order to, you know, in order to punish, you know, the right hand for inflicting damage on the left hand. Okay, so obviously that's a very interesting mashal, one which implies that B'Hafka L'Reacha Kamocha, right, perceives the entire Jewish people as a single organism, and you know, so it's like the story of Moshe and Aaron, Sheves Achim Gam Yachad. Right, the Medrash says the same thing about you know, Keshemen Ala Rosh. Right, the same idea is expressed in that interpretation as well. So Moshe V'Aaron, right, and the brotherly relationship that they enjoy is comparable to the relationship that is supposed to exist, you know, with every member of Klal Yisrael. Every member of Klal is supposed to be a brother. It's interesting that the Ramban, notwithstanding his more limited view of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha that we mentioned last time in Kedoshim, but you know, when it comes to the Isser of Lekichas Ribis and the Din of Shemitas Ksafim, when the Ramban wants to explain why those are limited, you know, to Jew and Jew relations and don't apply universally, so he explains that it's not discrimination. It's the lefnim mishur sadin of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, the sense of achva and family. So this idea of, you know, Moshe, Aaron, all members of Klal Yisrael, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, one organism, you know, it's like, you know, amputating, you know, your right hand for the damage that it inflicted, you know, etc., is a has a certain reinforcement even within other treatments of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. So on the one hand, there's a certain self-interest implied by that Yerushalmi, right? But it's a certain, because the point is that you're not going, you know, you don't benefit from amputating your right hand, obviously. You just, you know, inflict further damage, and there's no sense in doing that. But at the same time, again, there is a bit of a, in the sense that it, you know, the self-interest aspect, but of course it's a self-interest that flows from a certain perspective, which is very idealistic, namely this idea that Klal Yisrael constitutes a single organism. Okay, so if we look at the Rishonim with regard to this issue, I think we can really see on these different perspectives. The first one is, I'm going to stop in one more second, is the Tosfos that I mentioned on Memhemet Aleph and Rabbeinu Yonah in Sanhedrin as well. The Moshe of Zakenim in his Parashat Torah in Kedoshim also quotes some of these shitas. He also has another suggestion, and that is an idealistic one, but one which limits V'ahavta l'reacha kamo, the full ambition of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, to ishto. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, zu ishto shetzorech lehov, ishto kegufo. Right? Works in nicely. So the, now again, it's impossible for the Bali Tosfos to suggest, just as it was impossible for the Bali Tosfos in Sanhedrin to suggest that Broro Misa Yafa is the only V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, since there's no Chayacha Kodmin, what are you going to do with all the other Gemaras? Bali Tosfos knew that. So too, it's impossible for the Moshe of Zakenim, right, to really think that V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha is limited to Ishto. So in the case of the perspective of Tosfos and Sanhedrin, I think what we need to say is not that the only time you can have V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha is when the person's about to be put to death, but that what he means more broadly is that you express V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha only when there's no Chayecha Kodmin competition. And all the Gemara cases that we have of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, all the norms, let's say, that the Gemara records, are all cases which are non-competitive variety. In the case of the Moshe of Zakenim, I think you have to say something different. And that is that there's a kind of, you know, there are layers of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. And that the Torah formulates it in an ambiguous enough manner that it can mean different things in different contexts and different peoples. And that, of course, would also explain Baror Lo. Ein Adome the V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha that you feel when you're doing Baror Lo Misa Yafeh, right, to the opposite extreme of V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha when we're talking about Ishto, right, Shehi, Kegufo. And in between, there are other appropriate levels. In other words, there's a chiyuv v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and that is to treat your fellow Jew, right, in some sort of a transcendent manner, as a family member, right, lifnim mishuras hadin, and sometimes, you know, with the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha of the Ramban that we spoke of last week, which means you can't match the intensity of your own ego, but you can match the range, let's say, of areas, right, where you express your kamocha. And other times, you know, even, or as we discussed today, in a situation, even where you disapprove of this person, you're putting him, you know, to the death penalty, even here there's a way to find, you know, an expression, something that lightens his load a little bit emotionally, or establishes, even at that, you know, a terrible moment, you know, that there are people who identify, you know, with his plight. So the point is that V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and the different explanations that might stem from that, are all true and applied, you know, maximally, given what is conducive in different circumstances or in different objective relationships. And I think that's what that day in the Bali Tosfos that the Moshe of Zakenim is quoting of as well, meaning if you want, how can Torah use an expression that's so intense if you usually can't achieve that intensity? The Moshe of Zakenim, this collection, as we know, Bali Tosfos, earlier quotes the Ramban. It's a later collection, so it's not only Bali Tosfos, but the piece before it is the piece of the Ramban. So I think that the point is, whoever put the pieces together, it's their way of saying, you know, the Ramban is right because, you know, you can't manufacture something that, you know, that's inconsistent with human nature, right? But the psukim, which sound like they're saying more than that, are right too, you know, when it's possible to apply it. And that's V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. That's gufo, ishto rather, shehi kegufo. So I think that the Rambam also took this kind of an approach, but I think he, Kedarko, expressed it, meaning that V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha has different meanings and you're supposed to express it, you know, given different types of relationships or types of circumstances. But these are all different levels of kiyumim of yafter achar melacha. I think the Rambam expresses it kedarko by employing the yafter achar kamocha in different places in his works, in different ways. So I guess we'll have to wait for next time. But in the Koteret, the places to look are the Koteret to Sefer Madna, of course, where he talks about in Hilchos Deos, in the Shirashim, and in Sefer Mitzvos, as well as in Hilchos Avel. When you put all the ones together, there are times when the Rambam speaks about, you know, we have to come up in very pragmatic terms, things, Maisa Mitzvos that you have to do. There are other times when he drops the word Kamocha or Reacha, right, just Abbas Reim, right? But it doesn't say Behafta Kamocha. Sometimes he has the Kamocha, and sometimes he speaks about it in the more ambitious sense. I think the point of the Rambam is that the actions that you do have to be, you know, conducive, obviously, to the relationship and to the circumstance, but even more, they are supposed to build the climate, you know, which increases the intensity, so that ultimately, you know, you may be able to accomplish the ambition of the full kamocha. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll continue. I'm not sure, probably after Pesach, I'm guessing, with this. I'll try to do one more on the